This is the Minnesota Sports Insider Podcast. Here, we talk about all things Minnesota sports. Wild, Wolves, Vikings, Twins. We cover it all. We try to take a deep dive. We try to break down players' development, how the trade market looks, how our GMs are evolving over time, and everything all Minnesota sports right here. Welcome back to the Minnesota Sports Insider Podcast. Today, I have Skyler along with us. We're going to be talking some Minnesota Wolves. We have some big breaking news in Wolves world that came out this morning. We had a couple nice things that happened over the weekend with the Summer League. We'll kind of discuss all those things. Wolves. Today, Sky, how are you doing? What have you been doing now the last day or two?
I'm doing pretty good. Yeah, we got a lot of interesting topics to talk about with the Wolves. Just been relaxing on the weekend, not doing much, but yeah, excited to talk some Wolves today.
All right. So, we can go through a few things, start off. Sky, what do we have first on the old docket here today?
Let's talk about the Wolves Summer League and what we saw in the last game, and we'll start there.
Okay, so we last had that podcast on Friday. Since then, we played that another game, right? We played on Sunday. And, you know, now we're 4-0. Unfortunately, like I was kind of alluding to, I think at last podcast, I said there's a pretty decent chance that even if we go 4-0, that we wouldn't make the championship game because of point differential, which was a tiebreaker. Unfortunately, that happened, and that was the case. We missed out on, I believe we missed out by 5 points, 5 whole points from being the championship game, but that's okay. We are 4-0. The last victory was cool, though. Thoughts on the last victory? What do you think?
It was disappointing. We were all cheering for him to win by 8 points, and it was a very, very, it was a tough game for the T-Wolves. It was a good game. It was a grinded out game, and it was close the whole way down the stretch. And I mean, at the very end, there was some excitement. Jaden McDaniels hit that last second buzzer beater three, banked it in to tie the game, to push it into overtime. That was very exciting. Nice to see Jaden McDaniels get some confidence there. And then kind of in overtime, Jalen Noel just took over. He hit a couple threes. I think he had another two-pointer he had in overtime, so he kind of took over. Still couldn't get that 8-point victory that we needed, but we won the game, and I mean, that's all I was really cheering for. And I'm sure the players, they enjoyed the win as well. I'm sure they would have liked to get to the championship, but winning the game is a good consolation.
Yeah. So a couple things with this. First, there were two players that really just starred in their role once again. One, Jalen Noel. I believe he dropped like something 26 or 28 points, seven rebounds and a couple assists. Efficient, had a good game. Really had some big shots late in the game. Took over, you know, he made a couple threes, which was nice to see. We all know that he can score at the other levels of the game, just the outside shooting. Can he be a little more consistent? Showed some signs there. It's just one game, but and you know, one thing that caught my eye was Finch. I think it was halftime of that game. He was asked about Jaden McDaniels and Jalen Noel, and he mentioned he talked to the point of Jalen Noel. We know he can score, but two things they want to see him get better as: playmaking, having the ball in his hands, a point guard. And the other thing is, because I think they want to play him with Beasley. The other thing they want to see from him was his defense. And I noticed a couple times during the game where his defense was awesome on the perimeter. I mean, it was really fun to see his defense take a step. He was sliding, he was shuffling. I know it's easier said than done, but he legit was staying with the player. And he was doing a pretty good job also at guarding the big when he got switched onto him, trying to get into like the chest, the abdomen, the hip, you know, taking that space away, almost boxing out essentially. So like it was some nice sign to see Noel's defense. If he can take a step up, you know, like that makes Noel a lot more playable in big situations, you know, and at least like when you need him in big stint in the third quarter or to start the fourth or things like that. So that's cool. My other takeaway was McDaniels was just fantastic on defense again. I mean, he talked about that he added some weight, and he said maybe you might not see it because he's pretty thin. But I'm starting to notice some of those things that like against Patrick Williams the game before, or two games before that, just looked like he was able to hold his own against a pretty thick guy, pretty strong guy in Pat Will. And you know, I like the way that that Jaden McDaniels has been able to defend in the post more so than how he did in the regular season. And then his ability to guard on the perimeter is just fantastic. I don't know how many 6'10 guys with over a 7-foot wingspan can legitimately guard and move their feet like that outside of like Ben Simmons, in the perimeter. So that was pretty cool to see. I was really excited to actually watch him play consistently on defense. Still got to work on cleaning up some messy fouls. Sometimes they're a little bit silly. So, but you know, our two best players they should be our two best players in summer league are playing like our two best players, and they're carrying our team to a undefeated team right now. For whatever that's worth, I think it's nice to see. So that those are all good things. When we talk about the Wolves. Did you want to talk anything else about summer league? Did you have anything else you wanted to add? Other guys that you maybe you know? I know you talked about Knight already, but I don't know what your thoughts about McKinley Wright and Isaiah Miller are, or any other guys that caught your eye.
Yeah, McKinley Wright to me he's a nice prospect to have. I don't see him developing into really anything in the NBA, not even really a backup point guard. I mean, the only shots he shoots, he has like one shot in his arsenal, and that's pretty much a running layup or floater, and doesn't have much offensively beyond that. I mean, same for Isaiah Miller. Isaiah Miller made a three late in the game, but I mean, I wouldn't say they're much prospects at all. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I've seen some people get excited about McKinley being a backup point guard. I don't see it on an NBA team right now. I personally don't see it. I get he's from Minnesota. I get he plays, you know, hard defense. I get he's got some game inside of the 16 feet within. He's good at passing and stuff like that. He's a smart player. There's no doubt about that, but being
I could see him as like a 10th guy off your bench, 11th guy, like really back end rotation who just never plays, but he's there with the energy he can bring. I mean, he's got good energy, so that's good. But yeah, I don't really see much beyond that.
Right, and I don't. It's really hard to make the league when you're probably 5'11". You know, realistically, there's legitimately you can count on two hands how many guys actually play in rotations on teams that are under 6 foot tall. It's just you're fighting. It's an uphill battle, right there. And then on top of that, you can't shoot the three well. You know, like that's another problem, right? Like, he's going to be a very good player on a G League team, you know, and could he get a chance if guys get injured as, like you said, the 9th or 10th or 11th guy, maybe, you know, like, sure. But I, at this point, I just don't see enough from McKinley Wright. He's got to develop some other parts of his game at this point because he becomes a liability because it's going to be hard for him to even do what he does really well, which is, you know, finish around the rim and shoot those little floaters and, you know, within 10 feet, like, because you got trees in the NBA. You don't got 6'8" guys anymore being the centers. You got 7'1" guys with 7'4" wingspans and that have 35-inch verticals. You know, like, good luck. So, yeah, I'm not trying to be negative about the Minnesota guy, but I don't see it. Isaiah Miller flashed with that amazing dunk. That was I don't know if anyone, how many people watched that, but that was absolutely spectacular. That was a great dunk. That doesn't change my mind. And if I don't think he's going to be ever a part of this rotation, but nonetheless, that was a sweet dunk. And I was really excited to see Isaiah Miller play some defense in the last few games, but yeah. Sky, make sure your thing is muted or whatever. But when I was watching some of these guys, I noticed that, you know, like, there's not a lot of players that I think are going to ever be part of a rotation. Knight maybe could in the future. I still don't see it this year. I think he's going to be in the G League for sure, but like, I don't see it for at least a year or so. So I don't think there's a lot to talk about there. It was nice to see Knight perform. It was nice to see Miller and Wright do some nice things, but my takeaway is it's pretty simple. Like, the only guys you're really going to see in this roster that played in summer league is Noel and McDaniel. So let's move on to the next topic. Skyler, what's next on? What do you want to talk about with the Wolves here?
So we have up next. So let's talk about why trades will start coming to fruition in the NBA and why that may or may not affect the Timberwolves.
Okay. So over the last few weeks here, I've been trying to predict when these trades are going to fall down, when the dominoes are going to happen, kind of thing. And I started to think a little bit after watching a show on Peacock for Ball and Country about the Olympic team. I started to think, I was like, well, here's a couple of reasons why there hasn't been trades yet. And it's because of the odd timing from the COVID season and then the odd off season that have completely different normal scheduling. First, our off season started literally in the middle of the Olympics. That's not normal. The Olympics usually start where they usually did this year, but our off season usually starts the first week of July. Right. So like all these guys, like stars, like Dame Lillard's literally playing. Beal was literally on the Olympic team with USA. Right. So my point is that there's a legit chance that that person could get hurt, or that person could change their value in some sort of way, or there is that just possibility. Is it likely? No. But as a GM, I completely understand why those trades haven't been made, because one, the Olympics were going and there's that chance. And two, it's also time to get evaluated. You can start evaluating honestly on some of these guys still, if you want to get a last look at them. And then three, Summer League just started right after the Olympics ended. I mean, legitimately right after. So, like, why is that important? A lot of in these big trades, when we talk Beal, when we talk Dame Lillard, you know, you are including probably a third team in a lot of those trades. And if not, other pieces, younger players. And a lot of these guys are first and second year players, meaning they're playing in the Summer League. Like, McDaniels is I'd love to keep him. But I'm just giving you an example, like, at least from the Wolves. That's a guy who could be traded in a bigger package. I mean, it's a long shot to get a bigger player. And, again, you don't want to be trading guys when, first, you can evaluate them because they're legitimately playing on ESPN in summer league games. Two, because they can get injured. So I think it's pretty simple. Like, well, you know, it's the same thing. Like, why don't they do trades sometimes? Why is it so, like, not – you don't see as many huge trades during the middle of the year. And it's because, I mean, especially during when a guy's literally playing a game, they do it after the game because guys could get hurt and stuff like that. So I think it's pretty simple that when you're looking at the landscape of the NBA, that there won't be a lot of trades to be had until Summer League wraps up, which is this Tuesday, which is the championship game. And the Wolves do play that last game today at 4:30. So to me starting to look like you saw the Eric Bledsoe trade, I think it was on Sunday night, and you saw the trade with the Wolves, we'll get into that later, this morning, and you're starting to see some of these trades pop up more with prevalence, and you're starting to see the NBA, the GMs open up, because all the games before preseason are going to be done by 8 o'clock tonight. Okay. And that's, to me, the window of when these GMs are going to start to go, because the first domino has to fall, and that's going to be with either Beal or Ben Simmons or Dame Lillard, maybe, or even CJ McCollum. But that time is really approaching now. There's nothing left to play for. What do you got on that? What do you think about that?
You said that the dominoes will start to fall by 8 o'clock tonight. Is that what you said?
I think I said that all the games are just wrapping up tonight. That's the last game. It's the last game. But for any rookie, second year player, or NBA player, whether it was the Olympics or summer league games, that will be done by tonight. And now we have everyone off the courts, and there's no liability.
No, yeah, that's a good point. I mean, look at the trade that the T-Wolves made that we'll get into soon. I mean, none of those players were playing overseas or in the summer league. And that's just to your point. There is no thing where they can get injured, so they're up for trade now, and that's when they did it. So when do you think that these trades, now that everything's done, will start gaining a lot of steam and traction?
I think we already have seen it starting to come to fruition. You know, not that there weren't trades before this week, or that there were serious trades before this week, but we saw that two-period gap, basically, between, like, the Olympics – or, sorry, from free agency to the Olympics – to right now. And like there weren't a lot of trades between the Olympics until like Sunday. You know what I mean? That there were a couple, but there weren't a lot. So it's an interesting thing to look at when you're looking at all these things. But I would have to imagine that it probably starts in the next coming 2 to 3 days. Like, I wouldn't be shocked if you see a couple of these trades pop up by next week at all, because preseason does start on September 15th for a lot of teams, which is, looking at the calendar, that's less than 4 weeks away from today, right? So, or about that. So you want to get these guys and make sure that you can have them settled in, ready. There's no complications, whether they're in a different country or whatever they're doing. Make sure you have them ready by training camp, which is essential for a lot of these young coaches and teams. So, yeah, I'd have to say to that question is, it's likely it started with the Bledsoe trade. It went with Patrick Beverley and Culver and Wancho today, and I think you're going to keep seeing a couple more smaller trades around the league, and you're going to eventually see some bigger trades potentially by the end of this week. I would not be surprised. We heard today about from Woj that right now there's not a lot of new news about Ben Simmons. But the one thing that he did mention, the only team he mentioned, was the Wolves were still team sniffing around. And the Wolves are still kind of saying, like, hey, we're not going to say that you're asking for the moon. We're not going to act like you're being ridiculous with your offer. We're going to still try to make something work, which is smart on Gerson's end. It is smart. So before we go too far, we're going to stop for a little break, and we'll be back in a moment. And we're back. Minnesota Sports Insider Podcast. We are with Skyler today talking about the Wolves. Sky, we kind of just wrapped up the last conversation talking about kind of when will these trades, big trades we're talking about, really start to happen. And I thought it was a good question to ask. And, you know, before we keep going in with the rest of our pod today, I do want to, like, kind of finish up that conversation quickly and kind of, you know, talk about if these trades do happen, still an if, the time period from when those trades are realistically going to happen is from today until basically, I would say, the first or second week at the latest in September. Because, again, training camp, people are starting to report like for the Wolves. They will start to report by the 14th and the 15th at Mayo Clinic. I went and looked up during our break. So we have like 3 weeks realistically where these trades are going to get done. And, you know, like we know that Ben Simmons, for instance, has not been in contact with the head coach, Doc, and with Morey and Elton Brand. Okay. So that's a good point to bring up. But, you know, I'd like to think that if there was a deal to be done with any of these three guys that we've talked about, or even four, if you include McCollum, you know, it's looking like it's going to get started either this week, like whether you hear some of that conversation get heated up again towards the end of the week or by next week. But it's either now this offseason or maybe none of them get traded. And it's like that James Harden thing where we knew he was eventually going to get traded, just like we know Ben Simmons is eventually going to be traded because he's not happy. It's beyond the point of repair. So if it's not in the next 3 weeks, at some point during the season, it will happen. But, you know, we'll look past that. So, Sky, what else we kind of want to talk about today?
So let's talk about the big news that happened today with the Wolves, and that being the Patrick Beverley trade.
Okay, yes. So, you know, the trade was Jared Culver and Juancho Hernan Gomez for Patrick Beverley. First reaction was, Sky, what was your first reaction when you heard that trade?
First reaction was, thank God Jarrett Culver is no longer a Minnesota Timberwolf. huge relief, personally, for me, just not a Jarrett Culver fan. I know probably a lot of you other guys aren't either. Also, it opens up playing time at the four for players like Jared Vanderbilt, because Juancho is no longer sucking up those minutes. So I think that's also great to have more minutes available to guys like Jared Vanderbilt. I mean, even guys like Jalen Noel, it'll probably open up minutes like for him. And Patrick Beverley, I mean, he's a great backup point guard. We are no longer stuck with thinking Jordan McLaughlin might be the backup, even though, I mean, I love Jordan McLaughlin. I bought some of his merchandise. If there's any Jordan McLaughlin lovers out there, he's got his own website where you can buy some of his clothes. But he's a work in progress to be a backup point guard. So I think this solidifies our backup point guard spot, brings a little defense, a little more defense that we're lacking in with Patrick Beverley. He's a veteran. He knows how to win. He's been in playoff games. He's been in big games. Hopefully his veteran presence can teach some of our younger guys how to play defense, the thing that Patrick Beverley excels in. So those are some of my quick takeaways from the trade.
Yeah. So a few things that I'm going to say, I'll say a few things on this for sure. First is, when we talk about a player like knowing how to win, I always think of, or they've been in winning situations, I always think of, they know what it looks like and they know what it sounds like to a degree. Like when we're talking about Beverley, you know, I don't think like anyone necessarily knows exactly how to win unless you're like a legit superstar, right? But like they understand the makings of what can help enable those extra wins that happen in the win column. And, but, you know, also what that looks like as leadership. And I know we talked about, Sky, off the record, we talked about the age of this Wolves team, especially before today's trade. I believe Dane Moore had a tweet out today. I thought it was kind of funny. It was his 32nd birthday, and he said he was 5 years older than the next oldest Wolves player, which is crazy. Like, we're talking about an NBA team here, not a, you know, some other college team or anything like that, or an amateur team. Like, we're the oldest guy we had was 27 years old, and that guy was Torian Prince. So this not only adds a guy that's been around winning, that brings, you know, some leadership, but, you know, we're bringing in a guy that probably knows a lot of NBA schemes and really understands how to run a second unit. And I think that's really important, because for a long time, we relied for over the last 5-6 years, Tyus Jones was a good backup point guard, right? And then we get Jordan McLaughlin. We've had Derrick Rose at points, I guess, kind of playing sort of a backup point guard role. Had some interesting players, but we haven't had, of all these guys, okay, we haven't had a true two-way guard, a three backup. I mean, a backup two-way guard who can
might
who
argue can, Rubio as a two-way. Yeah, well, but, it's not really two-way.
No, I wouldn't. But. Yeah. I wouldn't say Rubio because he can't shoot, but yeah, he can create a little bit of offense. But yeah, this guy, so Beverly's a guy who legitimately shot between 42% and 43% field goal percent in the last few years, and top of that, he's been a career 38% 3-point shooter, and that has not deviated any south of 37% in his last 6 years. So that's pretty interesting. You know, he's going to shoot pretty much guaranteed north of 37% from three, probably going to shoot three or four threes a game, you know, probably going to shoot only 7 or 8 times a game. You know, he'll give you a couple assists. He'll give you a couple of rebounds. He'll give you a couple steals. And the question mark with me is, can he stay healthy? I'm looking at his, how many games he's played over the years. You know, he's played, about 50-60% over the last 3 years or so, you know, of the games. So you just hope that he can play. I would say just hope he can play towards the end of the year. If he's going to be hurt, miss like maybe a chunk of games in the middle or the beginning or something. I know you can't pick and choose those things, but maybe let's just aim to get 50 games of Pat Beverly in a Wolves uniform this year. How, now another thing I'm going to add is he's an expiring contract. So, two things here, Culver and Wancho. Well, that's two roster spots. We're getting back just one. So it opens the door for another player to potentially be on this team. Okay. Another thing is that Beverly, like if you look at the contract situations, Beverly again is an expiring contract at just over $14 million. Okay. And Culver had extra money beyond this year. He had another year after this year of a little north of $7 million. So you get off the money for Culver, not only for this year, this is sad because he's a first round pick. So we'll get to that in a bit. Okay. But get off the books of him in the future. And then also, you know, like, yes, Wancho did have a team option. So that's Gerson's control to if he wants him back for next year, but you know, you get rid of arguably your two worst remaining contracts on the team. And that's a big deal. You know, like, that's a big deal. Now let's get into this, because that's a good segue into what I want to talk about. So, Sky, can you kind of elaborate for us, you know, on why we should hold the brakes, as Jalen Rose likes to say. Hold and pump those brakes on saying, wow, Gerson's had a great offseason. Why should we?
He's kind of basically just cleaning up his own mess that he started a couple of years ago, or by drafting Jarrett Culver. That was his decision. And how we got him was we traded Dario Saric and the 11th pick to move up to the 6th pick. And we all are assuming that Gerson was targeting the player in Cleveland, Garland. That's who we thought he was going to target, the point guard. And he ends up getting picked the pick before us. And then Gerson stuck with Jarrett Culver and he picks him. So he's just been cleaning up his mess ever since that fateful, terrible draft day. And if you think about it, Gerson basically traded the 11th pick and Dario Saric for Patrick Beverley. That's kind of how it turned out, which is, oh, man, that doesn't feel good.
No, it's definitely not great. And like you were kind of alluding to, it's a good job by Gersonov digging out of that proverbial hole, but nonetheless doing it and doing so with, you know, maybe he's got some utensils in his back pocket. So he's doing a good job of cleaning up his mess. So that tells me that he can wheel and deal to an extent if he knows what players that are good players that could fit our team. Just the question of can he identify what actually we need. So the retooling, I guess, in sense, has been decent, you know. And then to add on to that, so that it all really started with the Colbert. That was like we hired Gerson on like in May or in June. I can't remember. It was one of those months. And then from then we end up doing that trade, Levin and Saric, to get Colbert at six. And like you said, with the Garland situation. And then it got into eventually, unfortunately, we traded, you know, that next trade deadline. We got all those players. We got Beasley. We got Wancho. We got Vando. Okay. That was a crazy trade, to be honest. One of the biggest trades in NBA history. And we got Wancho. And then, you know, we saw Wancho kind of pop off the last 10 games before the COVID season hit. And then we come up and we get into like November and we re-sign Wancho for $7 million on 2-year deal plus one team option. So potentially a 3-year deal at 7 for $21 million. And that was another one where I'm scratching my head and I'm thinking, we could have used that money on a Paul Millsap, or if we couldn't get him, some other player that at least could actually help our front court, right? Not just like this gimmicky, we're trying to call him a stretch four. Let's stop that. And then trying to call him a 3-and-D, that was crazy. And, you know, the long story short, that happened, and we traded for Rubio on draft night. Now, we got a draft pick with that, so that turned out to be essentially Balmero. But, you know, like, it was three mistakes of getting Rubio, it doesn't fit our team. Getting Wancho and re-signing him, the mistake, and then the Culver trade on draft night. Like, yeah, it's been frustrating as a Wolves fan, and that's why I think we both are in agreement that I'm not willing to say, Gerson, great job, because I'm clapping because of the trade today. I'm happy, but I know that I have to be careful because he has to still prove that his whole idea is to take Towns and then put D'Lo around him. And then, to be honest, he got lucky that we didn't get the third pick in the draft where we were projected. And we got Anthony Edwards where we got the first pick. We were lucky. That is the game-changing thing that Gerson has in his back pocket. And I honestly think if we had the third pick instead of the first or the second, I honestly don't think that Gerson has a job in a year from now. I don't. If we had a Onyeka Okongwu, he's a good player, or we had another player, like, or even Wise, I don't know. But, like, I just don't know if he has a job, because I think that's how good Anthony Edwards can be. We will get into that in a different podcast, and we'll just nail down exactly the trajectory, what we think Anthony Edwards, because we try to give you some predictions, and we don't try to beat around the bush too much here. We try to, you know, if we get it wrong, we get it wrong, but we try to evaluate, and that's the fun of it. So, you know, the last thing I'll say about Gerson here before we move to the next topic is there are some things that he has to prove to our franchise, like, and to us. One, we got to start winning this year. There's no and next year. Okay, you got to start winning now. What does that mean for the Wolves? What does this move mean for the Wolves going forward? You know, and how does that affect our team in winning? I want to say that Beverly, if he plays 50 to 60 games, I mean, it's hard to quantify how many wins one player gives you and how he fits if you haven't even seen him play yet. But I want to say, like, if I'm just very much subjectively talking here, okay, this is a dart, a throw at the random part of the wall. that it might give us, you know, a couple, two, three more wins just because he might knock down our 117 defensive rating per 100 possessions to maybe 114, 115, like just alone by himself kind of thing. If he's playing 25 minutes a night, because he is a difference maker if he's healthy. So I don't know. Do you think that Beverly, Sky, do you think he can, you know, how do you, well, first, how do you like our rotation, and how do you think he impacts the rotation?
He definitely helps the bench unit. He'll bring that energy off the bench. Like you were saying, I don't think this is a trade that will just push the Wolves into playoff contention. I mean, it's a nice little piece. Don't get me wrong. He's going to help our team, and it's a great trade. But we're still missing that four spot. I mean, even though Jaden McDaniels has gained 10 pounds of muscle in the offseason, that's great. But I really do think to push the Wolves into the winning more wins than losses category, I think that we really need a really solid front court player like Miles Turner or Rashawn Holmes, like that type of player. And even getting a Paul Millsap type player, that pushes you, but just for a year or two, just because of his age, he's just aging. So, but I think that's what we really need to do.
Yeah. You know, and obviously we can't get Rashawn Holmes right now. And we haven't made a call on Turner. So those two things are less than like a 2% chance, you know? So, you know, thinking about getting a Paul Millsap would be, it's basically between Vanderbilt and Millsap. And, you know, either one to me will make not a big difference, but it will help your front court. Personally, I think I would choose Vanderbilt over Millsap just because of the fact that he's 23 or he's under 23 years old still. He's might be even 22. And he showed this level of rebounding that the Wolves desperately need, you know, and he's not a perfect defender. He still makes some mistakes. He makes some over aggressive mistakes, but his energy is contagious. And when I think of Pat Beverly in terms of energy, do not think when I say this, I'm talking about style, size, player. I'm talking about energy. That is the word I'm only talking about. Okay. No assumptions here. When I talk about energy of Patrick Beverly, I think that Vanderbilt plays with that same kind of intensity, that same kind of energy. And right there, like from the minute I watched Vanderbilt when he was in a Wolves uniform, I said to you, I like this guy. Like he's a person that can provide something that the Wolves don't have. That's grit. That's effort. That's, like Finch said, that's a give a shit level that's higher than most. And we need more of that. And you think of our team, you have guys that have that give a shit level that's high, from Okogie, from Vanderbilt, from Beverly, from McDaniels. Okay, it's like now you have some, you know, and Torian Prince is not a bad defender at all. So you all of a sudden have four guys that you know are going to play hard on defense. And you have even Torian Prince, who you know is not going to be a net negative on defense. Those are four to five guys that are going to be in your top eight of your rotation, top eight, top nine. And that's exciting. The Wolves have, if you think about the layout of their team, now you have a team that there's roles that are clearly defined. And that to me is a huge, we don't talk about role definement and clearly understanding where you are on your team and how you will impact your team enough that contributes to the art of winning. Because when you look at the teams that go deep in the playoffs, I mean, we know when we watch the Suns, we know exactly what Jay Crowder's role is on that team, whether it was with the Miami Heat last year or it was with the Phoenix Suns this year. We knew that role. and we knew he was going to fulfill that role pretty well. We have these kinds of guys, and that's there might not be these, and I'm trying to avoid being too optimistic, but there might not be these guys that are moving the needle drastically. But the one thing that's a consensus difference maker in this roster, this team, is that now we're starting to fill the pieces around our main scorers, around the Towns and the Anthony Edwards and the D'Angelo Russells, okay, like and the Malik Beasleys. Like now we have four guys that can shoot the ball, that the guys I just said, and we have four that I just mentioned before that are going to bring some level of defense and energy. And that's 8 to 9 guys in your rotation, right? Like, all of a sudden, we're not even talking about Jalen Noel or Naz Reid that will be fighting for the last spots in this roster, potentially. This is a good thing to see, nonetheless. Like, you know, it's a different story when we talk about Gershon and his and what he's done. But the fact of the matter is this team is better than last year. There's no doubt about that in my mind. This team's going to get more wins than last year unless everyone gets injured again, okay? But if this is a fairly healthy team, nothing crazy, just fairly everyone plays 60 or plus games or 90% of the roster does, I mean, you're looking at a team that I truly think this is a 40-win team right now. I believe that in my heart. It's a 40-win to 42-win team. I think it's a 500 team. If those 8 to 9 guys I say – in the rotation, stay healthy. That's how I see it. What are your thoughts there?
Broke that down beautifully. One question I have is, what percent chance if we don't make a big trade, like a Ben Simmons type trade, is the rumors of Paul Millsap coming to the Wolves like a thing? Is there a lot of backing to that? Or
I don't personally think so. Just because the situation that I think we have some belief in Jerry Vanderbilt, you know, is also interesting. He's without a contract. We've been negotiating with him. And guess who was at every single summer league game? Jared Vanderbilt. Isn't that shocking? He was at every single game watching it, supporting it, in the hotels with Towns. That just tells you, I think you get a sense. And it's not like Finch and Rosas were somewhere else. They were right there too. In Las Vegas. So you just get a sense that he's either going to – it really comes down to, because the money we have left, that it's either or. You can't have both. And you look at it, which is more likely to happen. I'd say 99% of the time in this given scenario, it's way more likely that we're going to land Vanderbilt. And on top of that, you know, it really just comes down to, does Vanderbilt take the qualifying offer around $3 or $4 million? Okay, or roughly around $3 million on a one-year contract, and then he goes into unrestricted free agency, which if I was his agent, I would recommend him going on a one-year contract and kidding unrestricted free agency so he can maximize his market. You can have all 30-something teams bid on him, or, you know, at least be interested in and say, here's my money I want for you, rather than if he takes a 2 or 3 year deal at like $7 million with the Wolves. You know, you're potentially limiting how much money he could make, you know, next year in free agency. So, you know, it to me just comes down to, does he take the 1 year qualifying offer, the QO, or does he take a multi-year contract or between $6 to $8 million AAV per year? So, yeah, I don't see Millsap as a realistic thing. And I think that what Millsap can provide you at like, what, $10 million or $8 million, whatever he gets, at 36 years old, you know, he does have a leadership and those intangibles that we've been talking about with Beverly. But does he really give you a lot more than Jared Vanderbilt does for like this year and next year going forward? And would you be willing to sacrifice just letting Vanderbilt walk because you don't have enough money? You know, like, I don't know. The question is, is there, because we opened up a roster spot today, which is interesting. Okay, we open up a roster spot. So, and I personally don't know if we're going to sign Jordan McLaughlin now on all this, like you were kind of talking about. Now the question remains, like, what if he does take the qualifying offer, Jared Vanderbilt, at, let's say, $3 million or $2.5 million. That's about what he would be at. Now, if he takes it below $3 million or below, would we have enough money to squeak out a deal with Paul Millsap? And to be honest, it does help your case if you're trying to sell to Paul Millsap that you're going to be a playoff or competitive team. When you make a trade like you did today to get Pat Bev, it does help your chances slightly. And you add that kind of guy that you know that you might want to work with, like a Pat Bev. And looking at it, if I'm Millsap, I'd be like, look, me and Pat Bev could be the leaders vocally on this team. And some guys, they like that challenge. And some guys, at the end of their career, they have different ideas. So it'll be interesting to look at that. I would just put my money on just signing Jared Vanderbilt, and then that'd be the roster we go with. So what is there another thing you want to look at here, Sky, with the remaining part of this podcast?
Well, yeah, you were talking that you had a mystery subject that we would talk about at the end here.
Okay, yes. All right. So it's been talked about a little bit on social media today. It naturally just popped up in my head when I thought about this. Ben Simmons. Okay. What Woj said today was intriguing. The Wolves have been around their ear the entire time, and they're still there. Other people, not to say that they're not around trying to sniff, but they're not as – it doesn't seem – when I hear those things, it sounds like the Wolves are consistently desperate to get Ben Simmons to an extent, okay, without giving up a big-name player like Towns or Ant. And they're not – they don't want D'Lo. So I'm looking at the landscape. Does the Wolves roster have better assets to get a Simmons now or before the Pat Bev trade? The answer, it's now. Okay, taking away a Wancho and a Culver and getting a Pat Beverly, who makes just over $14 million, by the way. Why does that matter? Why does that matter? Because you don't want to trade two guys. Like, let's say for some reason, the 76ers are a different team that we did in a three-way deal. For some reason, believe in Culver, and they wanted Wancho to match money. It takes two guys, and this is important, because not every team has that many roster spots because they don't want to just kick guys off because they like their guys. Like, we like our Jalen Noels. Every team has a Jalen Noel that they like or a guy similar. Like, two guys equal $14 million and two guys that are not proven in the league are a lot less valuable than a guy that makes $14 million by himself and a guy who's been in winning situations like Pat Bev. So Pat Bev at $14.3 million on an expiring contract. There's an asterisk next to that. It's important. Is interesting because when you're talking about the Warrior or the 76ers saying we want guys that can contribute to winning now. Well, Patrick Beverley can shoot. He actually can. People don't think he can, but he can shoot. Okay. And not only that, you add that with Beasley, who's making now $15 million this year. That's 20, just almost, it's about $700,000 away from $30 million. Why is that important? Because the T-Wolves could take in $3 million because Simmons gets 33, and that trade could work. You'd have to add two or three first-round picks. But a Pat Bev, Malik Beasley, two or three firsts is intriguing. If I'm the 76ers, it is. And then on top of that, that doesn't even need to necessarily matter. It's pretty intriguing to potentially a team like the Blazers, who could maybe trade a McCollum or a Dame, or could be pretty important to the Wizards. If you're trying to package up a trade in a three-way deal and Simmons is coming here to Minnesota and Dame or Beal are going to the 76ers, guys like Beasley, guys like Pat Bev and an expiring deal, multiple picks, and if you don't want to do multiple, you can include Jaden McDaniels, is now very enticing to a team like the Wizards or the Blazers in a three-team deal. I don't know what your thoughts are there, but
that out really well, and it's definitely interesting. I think for a trade like that, like Malik Beasley, Patrick Bev, a couple first-round picks to the Sixers for Ben Simmons straight up, I personally think it would take a little more, like a Jaden McDaniels or like a Naz Reid or another nice prospect to push him over the edge. But how you were talking in that three-way trade, where you then give like the Wizards those assets, and the Wizards in turn give the Sixers Beal, and then the Sixers in turn give us Simmons. I mean, that's a very interesting possibility that I didn't really think about. And yeah, it's interesting.
It's starting to make sense, because on the day that we get some news about Ben Simmons for the first time since last Thursday or Wednesday, Woj is reporting it live on ESPN TV about 10 a.m. And he's clearly saying that the Wolves are the only team knocking in the door consistently right now, and the only team right now talking to them. And about 20 minutes later, the trade goes for Beasley for Pat Bev. And now you're thinking to yourself, is this not just a trade, like the Taurean Prince trade? Is this not just a trade to kind of help get in on a three-way trade? And you think about what the Wizards would want. Man, like, if you package up, Beasley, Beverly, and Jaden McDaniels in a first, I'm sorry, but that's a haul. That is an absolute haul. Like, for Beal, like, Beasley's 24 years old, and he's a career 40% shooter, and he averaged 20 points his last 50, 60 games. Pat Bev is an expiring deal, so you open up, which is very key. That's why it's very key, because Wancho and Culver's deal does not open up money, because they had money in the books for multiple years. And you get off $14 million. So that's why if I'm the Wizards, I'm like, I'm literally really only absorbing half this contract of what we're trading in. And then you get leadership with some of the younger guys that you have in that team. And then you get some people, I'm starting to fall in love. It took me a little long, but Jay McDaniels is no joke as a player. He's seriously no joke. Like, he has a chance to be not just a pretty solid starter, like a pretty damn good one. You know, I'm not going to the all-star level yet, but I'm starting to becoming convinced that there's something there with Jaden McDaniels. And then you add like one or two first-round picks. Let's say it's two first-round picks, McDaniels, Beverly, Beasley for Beal. That is, you get a guy who's 21 years old in McDaniels. You get a 24-year-old sharpshooter in Beasley. You get off the books in 1 year of Beverly, and you get two first-round picks. That is a very strong deal if I'm the Wizards. I don't know what do you think that at least gets some intrigue there?
That is definitely a haul. The only thing that I would question is there a team that could offer more, like the Warriors?
Yeah. Kuminga and potentially or a Wiseman and a Wiggins in a first or two. They definitely can beat us if they really want Simmons, which I don't know why they'd be sniffing around Simmons for this long if they didn't want him. So they're clearly intrigued. Their scouting department and personnel clearly have given Bob Myers, the GM, the okay sign that we believe, and Steve Kerr believes, that this guy can help Steph Curry get another ring. Cause that's ultimately what Bob Myers said in his interview a few months ago. This team is Steph Curry's, and we're here to support giving him the greatest legacy that he possibly can have. And that's how you keep a superstar around. You know, that's how you keep a Hall of Fame around. Cater to their needs, cater to their legacy, and that's exactly what Bob Myers is doing. And that tells you one thing. They're trying to win now, and I still think the Warriors are still the front runners at this point. But I will say, if the Warriors – you know, I'd say this next part, what I'm about to say is less likely, but the Warriors aren't willing to give up a Kuminga or Wiseman and Wiggins and a first, you know, or maybe you don't even need a first. Like, if they're not willing to give up a Kuminga or a Wiseman and part of that package, I don't see a deal being done. But, you know, if I'm being honest, I don't think if I'm Bob Myers, you want both Kuminga and Wiseman on your team. I personally, because, you know, what makes, if I'm the Wizards, I would love to have Kuminga or a Wiseman and a Wiggins and a first in a three-way deal I think that's pretty intriguing. Like, that's where you get two, you get one guy, potentially Kuminga or Wiseman, being on a rookie contract for either 3 or 4 years, depending if you get Wiseman or Kuminga. And then you get Wiggins, who only has, I think he only has actually 1 or 2 years, I think 2 years left only on his contract, on $28 million. So, and then you get some draft capital. That's where you might, yeah, that's where you would lean that way. It's just, it'll be interesting, but it to me, it's going to come down, ironically, again, to the Warriors and the Wolves to get the player. It's like Gerson and Bob Myers, both are just like having this conflict, and like they're like these brothers, and they're like I want D'Lo. Like, oh no, we're the Warriors. We're going to get D'Lo, and then we're going to make you pay up for him after we get him, and we're going to give you assets. I mean, what a play by Bob Myers, you know, like what a freaking play, you know. And then we have to overpay for D'Lo, and now it seems like that the Warriors now have like we gave them two of the best assets that might be traded for Ben Simmons, which is potentially Wiggins and Kuminga, which was our seventh pick, you know. So it'll be interesting. I'm not gonna lie, I'm gonna be laughing hysterically in a sad way if it's Kuminga, Wiggins, and a first. Like, two of those assets are literally ours. That's just crazy to me. But that's kind of all I got on the Wolves for that. I guess the last thing we'll touch on real quick here is I guess we'll come back to it here, is the Wolves outlook here. You know, we talk about maybe being around a 500 team. So I'm thinking about the rotation. I think it's exciting to think about rotations that are actually like not horrible, you know, like after you get off the first three good players on our team. So like, I'm thinking about it. So like, chime in here, Sky, if you want. So we got D'Lo, 1. We got 2, Anthony Edwards. 3, I would play McDaniels. 4, I personally would play Vanderbilt, the 4. I wouldn't even mess around with Torian Prince. I wouldn't try to play small again. 5, Karl Towns. And then, so that would leave you with Jalen Noel, Beverly, Beasley, Okogie, Torian Prince, that's 5, and Naz Reid, 6. Those are our 6 guys coming off the bench. What do you?
That's exactly how I would have it. Yeah.
I mean, do you have any thoughts on like how those lineups would be? Like, do you think they're going to be pretty solid? Do you think they're like, what do you envision when you hear those lineups?
Especially that second unit. There's some defense. Well, there's defense on both units, the starting unit with McDaniels and Vando, and then the second unit with Beverly and Okogie, and then Torian Prince. You can play some defense. I mean, we're slowly building this not laughable roster of defense, I think.
Yeah, it's been really impressive. Like, you know, as much as I've hated on Gerson, at least he's showing some ability to help this team go in the right direction here. 2-3 years after the fact, since he started, you know, and it's, you know, I'm just thinking about D'Lo and McDaniels, Vando, Towns. I mean, you got two guys that can legitimately play defense at the 3 and the 4 with McDaniels and Vando. And off the bench, like you were saying, like we got Beverly. You have Okogie, you have Torian Prince. I mean, those are 3 defenders that can legit play defense too, you know. And to think about it, like I named 6 guys at the bench there. Those were 11 guys that we had in the. That means like 2 of those guys, likely, because Finch said he likes to run a 9-man rotation, are probably not going to play. So like now we have some legit position battles, like. At the like, it's not just, you know what, have a job, here's your 15 minutes a night, bud. Like, we have legit position battles for the 7th, 8th, 9th spot in our rotation. You know, like Beverly's gonna get one. Beasley's gonna get one. There's two. Okay, so that's our top seven for sure. Now you're left with Jalen Noel and Taurean Prince, and
most likely get one, don't you think?
Josh Okogie, and it's interesting. Yeah, I think so. I think so. Yeah, but I mean, I just wonder, does Naj Reid, you know, we probably do need size still because he's one of our taller guys, but how much time will Naj Reid, will he get the same minutes that he got last year? It'd be interesting to see. And we just acquired Taurean Prince. Like, this is, see, what I'm trying to lay out here is, you look at the layout of our roster, we have some pieces we could still trade that, like, doesn't need to be in a bigger deal. But like I mentioned, we mentioned in the last podcast, if it's not in a big deal, what if we're the third team in a different big deal that's getting some side pieces while we're trading some of our side pieces to make the money work? Because we can absorb some money. And especially if we have that trade exception for $4.8 million, if we include Taurean Prince's name. So it's like, you're legitimately not going to be playing one or two of those guys at the minimum in your rotation, whether it's Naz, Taurean Prince, Okogie, Jalen Noel. Like, and by all looks of it, I don't know I don't know if Jalen Noel is not, he might be a trade piece. I don't know, but maybe they like him a lot. It's tough to say, but there's going to be some fun. There's going to be some position battles, man. And it's nice to see for the first time in a long time since the Butler move that we do actually have some legitimate depth, and we have a couple two-way players, which is also exciting. Like, you look at our roster right now, McDaniels is – now, when I say two-way players, I'm not saying elite. I'm just saying guys that have some symptoms that have shown that are two-way player-esque. Like, McDaniels is showing that he has some of those. Beverly is showing some of those. Taurean Prince shot 40% in two of the last 3 years from three and is known to play above-average defense. I mean, those are three guys that you could say have some qualities of a good role player, two-way type guys. And those guys are the ones that we've been talking about as Wolves fans for a long time. We've been waiting for it, and it's just exciting that we're finally seeing some of these things. I'll leave it at, well, let's just give a rough projection here, okay? We are subject to change this projection, viewers, at any point before the season starts because of injuries, because of trades. So at this point right now, I'm going to predict that we are a 41 win team with this roster. Sky, you got your prediction?
Lower, because there's always something that seems to go wrong with the Wolves, injury or someone goes to jail like Malik Beasley. I will go 37 and 45. Is that what it is on an 82 win season?
Yeah. 37. Well, that wraps it up for today's podcast.